Area Voices tells the arts, culture, and history stories of northern Minnesota. In this segment, producer Katie Carter sits down with a local artist who made his mark on the New York City art scene, and he now creates his masterpieces in his studio near Park Rapids.
It's never a done deal, but then when you look back over the years, and you've been doing it for so long, then I guess you have to look at the fact that I guess this is what I do.
Aaron Spangler is a world-renowned sculptor and printmaker. He's shown work in several galleries in New York City, is part of many art collections around the world, and has recently had one of his huge, intricately detailed sculptures added to the Walker Art Center's Sculpture Garden in Minneapolis. We spoke recently about his journey as an artist, navigating through the New York City art scene, and his artistic process.
Graduated from Park Rapids High School. Then I went to MCAD. After MCAD, I didn't really have a concept of how to live as an artist financially or anything like that. And I was working, you know, jobs and whatnot. And I had gotten sick, and I was getting checked out. They thought maybe there was a kidney thing, and then the doctor was going to check for lupus. And, of course, in my mind, it's just going into crazy. And I'm laying there. I'm just sitting in this lazy boy at my parents' house. And I just had this vision to build this house up here on this was land that my dad had bought in the early 80s. And there was nothing up here, but I had a vision to build this place. And so I got better, and then I started driving up every weekend from Minneapolis and started clearing a half-mile road back here and digging a hole for the house and just scrounging stuff and sort of building the place. And then I thought, well, this is perfect. I'll build a house out of nothing, and I'll live so cheap that I'll, you know, be able to be an artist. So I did that for a summer, and then the next summer I was doing that again. Then I decided to move up here full-time, stayed in my parents' place, and then got a job at the sawmill in Two Inlets. And so that winter, every day after work, I came back here and worked on my house, finally moved in the springtime. You know, living the hermitage was not quite what I thought it would be at 25 or 24, however old I was, by the time I finished my house. And at that point, I decided to run down to Minneapolis. And I started to show, you know, some of my work with a gallery in Minneapolis, sell things here and there, that would help. But then, you know, at a certain point, Minneapolis, you know, the opportunity's not there, and for Amy too. And so one fall we decided to move to New York, and we just did. You know, we moved to Brooklyn, and then we were kind of stuck there. You know, I was doing art handling and doing construction there for pay and working on art in the evenings. I guess it was after a couple of years I started showing, and I was able to start, you know, making a living off of my artwork there. Once that started happening, first thing I did is took a chunk of money and had the studio built that we're sitting in, ran electricity back here. So I guess the first thing I was thinking about when, like, okay, I'm making a living here in the city is now I get to go back.
That's Aaron Spangler. Nowadays, he's based out of his home and studio in northern Minnesota, thanks to the relationships and the successes he garnered in New York City. The New York City art world is an area I know very little about, and I was curious to find out how an artist gets into a gallery or a museum, what that process was like.
The solicitation thing is not part of it. It's really more about, well, when you have a dealer, a good dealer in New York, since New York is really the center, New York and London, the kind of market centers of contemporary art in the world. And that gives you a lot of platform for curators to see your work, obviously collectors because they're selling work, and writers to see it. In a relationship with an artist and a dealer, you know, it's 50-50, and you split everything 50-50. And you're like, well, people say, well, what does the dealer get for 50%? Why does he get that much, right? Well, I mean, in some ways, maybe sometimes he shouldn't be, but if you have a dealer that's, well, I can't, especially sitting out here, but I mean, I can't get my work in the right place, and nor do I want to really hand sell things.
Right.
And, you know, and they're also paying for space and their relationships. So it's really kind of a marriage, you know, and you have ups and downs. The chemistry has to work, and it, sometimes it does or it doesn't. It's important to survive as an artist that way. So, and it's a really small world globally. It's, I mean, as far as like important collectors, maybe there's a couple thousand. So, and then everything kind of goes down from that. So those, like, when you start to get collected by those, the serious collectors, that trickles down to other collectors, right? So that drives a lot of your career. In New York, it's very easy to meet people. People are very warm and receptive, and people want to help you. And what's really great about the community there is that if your tribe is doing well, you're doing well. In New York, with the kind of gallery system, and it's your networks of people that help you and your relationships. All a gallery is, other than a space, is a group of relationships and trust. So it's kind of like it's one of the last businesses that's like the Wild West, where there's no contracts, there's nothing in writing. Large amounts of money can be exchanged, and it's all handshakes, and it's your word and your trust. So a dealer builds their career on the trust they have with people, and same with an artist. If you're an artist who goes behind dealers and sells out of your studio, and that word gets around. And it's funny because in art school, it's sort of like there's this idea that the gallery system is evil or somehow corrupt. But in a way, it's more pure because galleries can do whatever they want, and they don't have to answer to anyone. So they can really take a lot of risks. And if they lose, well, they lose a month's income or whatever, right? They can lose, but if they gain, they can make a bunch of money. And something about that, I think that they don't really play it safer. In some ways, they take more risks. And at a certain point, like in the museum world, usually artists are entering the museum world from the gallery system because people have, it's not like they're picking people out of nowhere to show at a museum. And you know, the people that support the museums are art collectors, rich people. And also, people buying the work, it creates another life for it, and then they have something invested in protecting that work. That's part of your artist's life, is other people that are invested in what you do. It's not just you. Yeah, you are making whatever you want, but I mean, as far as once it gets out into the world, you have this network of belief. Because there's no inherent value to anything in art. It's just what a community of people agree that it's worth.
At the time of our interview, Aaron and I were sitting in his studio, surrounded by life-sized, smoothed-out chunks of wood that will eventually become large-scale, intricately detailed sculptures that will have their own stories to tell. I asked him about the process.
I started out with relief work. In bas-relief, you have illusion, and you have actual sculptural space, and there's this play in that. And also, I was more into telling stories, you know, more narratively. And then it's sort of like the some of the objects and the characters that were in those reliefs started to come out and become sculptures. And then, so making sculptures in the round, and then they started to get smooth, and I started carving patterns into the sculpture. So I learned that when I was doing all these woodcuts. So one thing kind of informs another, and the process is what I trust. And usually I have some kind of sense of where I want to start, and then it almost always changes. I need to go through an identity struggle with it to get it to where it's something that means something to me. So there's probably no way around that, really, just because I need that for myself to feel like I've gone through something to make something. Most ideas are pretty bad, you know, but the process of making artwork is a really intelligent process that's hard to define. So in the process of just working with material and looking at things and coming back and staring, and in that process, if you trust that process, you can get somewhere which is beyond what you imagined, which is what I want to do. I want to get somewhere beyond what I imagined. So now I'm at this point where I don't even try to imagine what it can be anymore. I just go into the process. Whereas when I was younger, I think I would get fixated a little more on what this thing could be. As I get older, I have more confidence in that process. And not that I have any more answers, it's just that I trust that I will come through.
That is sculptor Aaron Spangler. You can check out his public art piece at the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis in their sculpture garden. He also has a piece on display at the Namath Art Gallery in Park Rapids. I'm Katie Carter. You're listening to Area Voices on Northern Community Radio.
Aaron lives with his wife, chef, and author Amy Thielen, and their son Hank deep in the woods outside of Park Rapids, where she makes her masterpieces in the kitchen. He makes his in the studio. I just finished her book, Give a Girl a Knife, and yeah. We'll be talking with her soon. I loved it. And she's getting rave reviews in Rolling Stone and, oh my gosh, James Beard Award-winning cookbook author. Not to take away from Aaron, sorry about no, that, yeah. But I'm so excited. I haven't read Aaron's
Where's
book.
Hank in the whole picture? Hank, kind of forgetting him.
No, Hank, like, remember
Do they
he
call him Hank or they call him Henry?
No, he's Hank, and he likes hard-boiled eggs and nuts. So if they're listening right now, Amy's laughing because he also likes Laurel and Hardy. So there we go. Area Voices made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the people of Minnesota.